Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann, and Phil Bush is with me. Phil, did you get your fill of cupcakes over the last week?
Listen, I am. My tummy is full, and I am ready to get into some real basketball.
We are looking ahead to a very important part of the Marquette basketball schedule in this week's show, as we talked about, really, but when just before the season began, we were going through the schedule. We kind of circled this week here, Phil, as the possibly the most important week on Marquette's schedule, if definitely the non-conference schedule, if not the entire schedule, with Georgia, Fresno State, and then Bucky. We're going to look ahead to Georgia and Fresno State, that we'll probably do a new podcast before we get to Wisconsin.
Badger Hate Week.
Yeah, we'll get to that as well. But we also took some questions on Twitter, so we're going to get to a couple of those. But Phil, first of all, just quick impressions from the three relatively drama-free wins over IUPUI, Houston Baptist, and Western Carolina.
I think, you know, one thing, and you and I texted each other during some of the games, as we're wont to do, and I think the overriding impression, because none of the games were really a challenge or should have been a challenge. IUPUI, you know, maybe should have been more of a challenge. But traditionally, even last year, those teams that Marquette should just put away, they've seemingly struggled with or made it not quite as dominant as they could have. And this year, you know, you can make some arguments around maybe not as strong defensively against IUPUI and Houston Baptist as they could be. But no matter what, those games were never in question. The offense looked good. The team handled their business. They look confident in doing it, which I think is certainly a mark of improvement from where we've seen this team be in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's really hard to take too much from it, as you were kind of referencing there, Phil, because, I mean, these are teams that all three of them, Marquette, just totally outmatched physically, quickness-wise. I mean, they were better organized offensively and defensively. They got a ton of turnovers. They got a lot of easy shots. They got some very inflated KenPom numbers over the last week. They're all the way up to 36 as we're recording this on Thursday night. And, yeah, overall, it looked easy because it was easy. And now we're curious, how well is this going to translate to this critical stretch here where two of the three games Marquette is probably projected to lose, and the other one, they probably should win against Fresno State, but that's a bit of a trap game because it's a short turnaround after Georgia, as we've talked about. But that kind of leads into the first question, Phil, as we kind of get back to looking back to what we've learned over the past week, and as we look ahead, Max Power on Twitter, that's his name.
Very strong
name. He asked
name.
Us, is the start... I'm down with it. I don't know if that's his real name, but that is how he's identified. He asked us, is the starting lineup we saw against Western Carolina the lineup going forward? And just to refresh your memory, the starting lineup against Western Carolina was Luke Fisher, of course, Sam Hauser, which was interesting, but of course, Caton Reinhart was out, but we'll get back to that. Marcus Howard, Juwan Johnson, Hanif Cheatham. So Fisher, Hauser, Howard, Johnson, Cheatham.
Howard Johnson.
That's the starting lineup we see going forward?
Yeah, well, and just to off the top, for those that weren't aware, and you referenced it, Caton was out against Western Carolina because he was sick. Supposedly he's good to go for Sunday's game against Georgia. But as Anonymous Eagle and some others have paint touches have made reference to, Caton ain't been performing well in the basketball games that he's played in. So I would have expected this move anyway, with sickness or not. Sam Hauser has certainly he's probably the best three-point shooter or most consistent three-point shooter on the team right now.
Yeah, who would have picked that?
Yeah, I didn't see that coming. But, you know, so he gives you more right now than Caton is providing. That doesn't mean that Caton couldn't recover, and, you know, the guy can't buy a shot. I mean, he took a couple of shots in the Houston Baptist game where he went, well, yeah, that's in the flow of the offense, wide open, and they just clanked around and fell out. So, you know, he's a guy who desperately needs a bucket. But I would fully expect – I wasn't surprised by Hauser. the Howard Carter Rousey decision on who starts, that could be up in the air, but I would expect based on Howard's performance in Western Carolina and generally how things have gone that he would stay in the starting lineup for Georgia as well. Though that may be a little iffy because you got a 17-year-old kid going into his first true hostile environment on the road against Georgia. I don't know if you want to start him or maybe start a steadier hand like Carter or Rousey.
Yeah, the interesting thing, but we'll touch on Hauser and Reinhardt here first. Of course, Matt Velasquez, the beat writer for the Journal Sentinel, he had an interesting quote from Wojo that he posted after the game on Wednesday night. This is from Wojo via Matt Velasquez. He said, "Sam Hauser has earned the right to start. If we had everybody healthy tonight, Sam would still be a starter. He's a good player and he's a winner, and we're better when he's in the game." So it sounds like Hauser has earned his starting job, and that's the way it's going to go going forward. As you referenced, several of us in the Marquette social media community, whether it's Paint Touches or Anonymous Eagle or us or whoever, we've all kind of broken down Caton Reinhardt's struggles. Still just six games in, but he hasn't looked good, and Hauser has. So until that changes, it makes all the sense in the world to start Sam Hauser. And granted, it could go back the other way. I mean, I'm certainly hoping Reinhardt can get things going and start making shots again. But as long as Hauser is playing as well as he has, I think it is in Marquette's best interest to have Hauser be the starter and play the most minutes that make sense at the power forward, and then have Reinhardt, whether he likes it or not, be the backup and be a guy off the bench who's going to hopefully help the team.
Well, and you got to think that Wojo was going to make this change anyway, if nothing else, to send a message to Reinhardt that nobody's guaranteed anything. And to your point, Sam is providing more offensive capability and certainly isn't worse on the defensive end. So he's earned his minutes, but Reinhardt's still going to have to get good quality minutes. He's still going to get plenty of play. I mean, I wouldn't expect Hauser to have more than 25 minutes in the game against Georgia, especially given, and we'll talk about it later, but especially given, who Georgia has at the four, there's going to have to be a lot of different players thrown that direction especially on the defensive end to give Marquette a chance. So the change is good. We'll see how long, if Sam Hauser gets cold, there's nothing that says that Reinhardt doesn't come in and, throw some bricks himself or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned Georgia. They have a big man named Yonte Maton who could be a big problem. He's averaging about 20-9 right now, and he's a big physical power forward. So Sam and Luke might have their hands full with him on Sunday. But, getting back to this the Caton point, I will just kind of wrap up that, and I'll actually just bring in this question before we move on from this topic. Paint Touches asked us one of these scrambled questions. It's a pretty good one. I guess it's fair to ask, even though it may be a little early for it, but he said, if Wojo could go back, does he still try for Caton? And I would say probably yes, just because it's early. If you ask me this question again in March and Caton's shooting percentages are still what they are now, I would say probably not. Because it certainly cost you Sandy Cohen transferring. Not that Sandy was a huge loss, but I think I would rather have Sandy at his best than Caton at his current state. I think that's fair to say. But we haven't seen Sandy at his best in a while, so maybe over the course of the next month or so, his shooting percentages will come around, and he, one way or another, will become a steady contributor. So I think it's a little early to say buyer's remorse on Caton, but if it continues like this, I think you could say, yeah, maybe so.
Well, I look at it from the business perspective in terms of the opportunity cost, right? So if you don't bring Reinhardt in, who are you bringing in?
Would Wally Ellington still be there?
Yeah, but we still have an open scholarship, right? So, I mean, it's not like a player was prevented from coming because Reinhardt was here. So, I mean, you could make the argument, to your point, you could make the argument that Wally Ellinson wouldn't have left because Caton came in. But I would also make the argument that if Wally couldn't beat out Reinhardt or didn't, or decided to leave the program because he felt he couldn't or what, and I guess we really don't know. We don't know that was his choice per se. But, and then on top of that, the Sandy Cohen thing, like, how off is your game right now if, you know, Reinhardt at playing the way he's playing, you can't get minutes over him. Like,
Yeah,
so
maybe Reinhardt's just a great practice player, right? We've heard that
well, it
about,
could be,
guys before.
and I
Maybe,
mean,
maybe.
Reinhardt, to be fair, and we talked about it last time, his statistical numbers are significant anomalies from where they were his first 3 years of playing basketball. Now, you can argue there's some red flags even within his first 3 years, and Anonymous Eagle made that argument that even some of his statistics in the first 3 years had red flags in it. But there's no reason to believe somebody that is historically a 36% 3-point shooter is going to continue to shoot 27% from three. Like,
Yeah. Hopefully he gets it going. So I think I agree with you. Just because, yeah, it didn't really cost Marquette anything bringing him in, as far as losing a player or anything. I mean, right now I could say you say it maybe cost you Sandy Cohen, but maybe that's not a big loss, and Wally Ellison's not a big loss necessarily, really
I
either.
mean, if
So.
there was, if there's, and who knows, maybe this is, and the answer's different when this, if this ever gets surfaced, but maybe there was a player that want, you know, a young player or a sophomore, junior transfer, something like that, that wanted relatively immediate playing time, that saw Reinhardt coming and said, "Oh, okay, I'm not interested anymore," even with that open
Yeah, like
scholarship.
say, like Khalif Young, for example, the guy
Right.
who's at Providence now, the freshman. I don't think their recruitments were related at all. Like if bringing in
Correct.
Reinhardt cost you Khalif Young, then I say, yeah, you that was a mistake. But I don't think those things were related because they were still going after Khalif Young after Reinhardt came in, and they were hopeful to get him. They just didn't. He went to Providence, so
Right.
I
And
don't think it. I don't think there's any harm adding depth. He's just the fact is Reinhardt right now isn't what they hoped, but we're not even a month into the season. So I would exercise patience with Reinhardt, and hopefully that shooting percentage comes back to the mean and he gets, closer to his 35, 36% career free 3-point shooting and at least can contribute to the team in some way. Then I think looks like for now it will be as Hauser's backup.
Well, and I mark my words, giving again, just from a statistical standpoint, there will be at least one or two games where Reinhardt makes a very significant positive contribution. I think he's just the type of player that he can be very frustrating, but if he gets on, if he gets hot for a game or two, you know, there will be some positive outcomes, and maybe that's all you really need out of him when you've got Sam Hauser playing the way he is.
Yeah, I think this wasn't one of the scramble questions, but somebody did ask after a Marquette game recently. They've already had, what, three guys have a 20-point game so far this year? How many more could have one? And because Rousey's had one, Cheatham's had one, and Fisher's had one.
Yep.
And Reinhardt, I would say, is a guy who could have a 20-point game because I think inevitably he's going to have a game where he knocks down four or five threes.
Yeah.
He just gets hot and knocks down a bunch, and then he gets in the 20-point range. So. Yeah, I agree with you. I think eventually he will have a big game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he could. So, and, getting back to this lineup thing, just to kind of wrap up the whole lineup discussion, getting back to the point guard spot, that part is interesting to me, Phil, is like you kind of touched on earlier, I don't know which way is the right way to go as far as if it's going to be Howard or Rousey or Carter going forward, because they all have their moments where you think, well, this is the guy, and I guess, who knows, that may be a fluid situation all season.
Yeah, well, and you'd hate to be there because I mean, I don't know if I've tweeted about it or not, but I feel like I've talked about it to some folks that the styles of play of Howard, Carter, and Rousey are just different enough that it when you're switching back and forth, it's not like you're taking out Carter and Howard and replacing with Howard who's plays the same style and does the same things. They're different. And you know, Carter's kind of a pass first player who drives more. Howard's more of a shooter that can pass and handle the ball well. And then you got Rousey who, you know, can drive certainly, but is by far a shooter first. You know, the game's going to change with each one in, and you know, so it gives you, I suppose, if you get the hot hand and you get a style that works against a given team, then you've got some flexibility to play different styles of offense against a team where one maybe makes more sense than the other. But it seems like we got to pick a horse and ride it to a certain extent.
Yeah. And I guess we're going to find out which way they're going to go in this upcoming game against Georgia. We talked about it briefly now, but as we look ahead, Phil, I mean, this is obviously a very critical game if you're talking about non-conference resumes, because Marquette really doesn't have a great win right now. I mean, I wouldn't call Vanderbilt a great win by any stretch, by the way their season's going. So, how do you feel about this Georgia game? Being this is their first true road game, and Georgia's had its ups and downs. They didn't look all that great against they played a Division II team the other night, Morehouse, and they ended up winning by just 14. But on the flip side, the previous week they stayed within 11 of Kansas. So I don't know what to think of Georgia.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think Marquette matches up well with Georgia. I think if this game were at home, I'd feel considerably better. I do think having the three cupcakes in a row, the team is, is seemingly playing with more confidence and getting more comfortable. So I think there'll be good matchups. I think the offense will be there for Marquette. I think if they can turn it into a run and gun type of game, speed it up, increase the number of possessions, I think that's very favorable for Marquette. Marquette protects the ball well. Georgia's bad at turning other teams over.
Georgia's not a particularly good shooting team
They're
either.
they're a relatively poor shooting team, which is especially from beyond the arc, which I think is going to be critical because, as we talked about Mattin in the past, he or previously, he is going to be the one to watch, especially with our height and some of the concerns around fouling issues. He could be a monster down low. So, I don't know how they set it up, but I think you want to go as many, go as fast as you can against Georgia and hopefully tire their bigs out and generate as many possessions as possible.
Yeah, as we're recording this on Thursday night, Georgia is actually in the near the very bottom in the country in 3-point percentage, 315 in the country according to KenPom. Conversely, Marquette is in the top 100. They're number 71. Marquette is in the top 10 in the country in 2-point percentage and free throw percentage. Now, they don't get to the free throw line very much, and I think that's going to happen when you're mostly a jump shooting team. But at least Marquette's getting to the line and making them.
Right. Well,
And
what the other thing that's crazy, so effective field goal percentage, which is kind of the accumulation of all of the different shots and kind of,
yeah, bonus points for threes, right?
yeah, bonus points for threes, they're top 10. They're ninth in the country in effective field goal percentage, and that's with Caton Reinhardt playing the way we just talked about him playing.
Right.
Imagine if he was just average, what this offense looks like. So it's definitely not an offensive problem. Any concern is going to be around the defensive end. So I think you've got to turn defensively. Marquette's got to turn Georgia into a jump shooting team in this game somehow.
Right, you can't let Yonte Maton get too many touches in the post, because he's going to go down there. He's going to go to work. He's going to try to get Fisher and Helton foul trouble, and if he's able to succeed at that, then it might be a tough day for Marquette, because he's, like I said, he averages 20 a game, and so he's a guy, if he has his way down there, especially if Fisher and Helton are both limited, I mean, he's a guy who could go for close to 30 against Marquette, because they would probably just feed him all night, because they're definitely not going to beat Marquette with the outside shot. So I think that's got to be the plan, is you've got to really pester him down low and, I guess double team him and just dare Georgia to beat you with the outside shot. And if they make him, then I guess you live with it. But so I think that's kind of the way I look at it, is defensively the focus has to be in the paint against Georgia.
Yeah. One, well, and you wonder, again, with Georgia's shooting woes, and I hate to keep harping on it, but I do wonder if we don't see some 2-3 zone, especially if we start to get into some foul trouble.
Yeah, but Wojo may have that in his back pocket. He's gone to it before when things get uncomfortable, so we'll see if that's an option. KenPom has Marquette as a slight underdog in this game, as a 1-point underdog on the road here. So basically a 50-50 game here. And Paint Touch has asked us this question online, Phil, is they pointed out last year that Belmont, he said, even before the season, may be the most important non-conference game, just because for the sake of getting a good non-conference win. And he's thinking, maybe is that the same for the Georgia game this year? With that perspective, as far as building a non-conference resume and getting a quality win, would you call Georgia the biggest game of the season? Is that too much?
I think it's too much. I think because it's going to come – because there's going to be plenty of opportunities. If you lose the Georgia game with the Big East, there's going to be plenty of opportunities. All right, I shouldn't say it that way, I guess. There's plenty of games left to make it up. But yeah. But you do have to look at the perspective of if you lose that Georgia game, the cover you have, or I'm struggling for the word here, but you have
little room for error.
Yeah, the leeway you have when it comes to conference season gets very, very small. You almost have to go. You would have to go at a minimum, 10-6, I would think, or 10-8.
See, I don't think even that would be good enough if you lose to Georgia and you lose to Wisconsin, because I think if you lose both of those games, I think you got to get 11 or 12 to make up for it. I mean, because you got to have some good wins on your resume. Because if you lose to Georgia and Wisconsin, you have basically nothing in your non-conference schedule to say, look what we did.
That's correct.
Bunch of cupcakes, and you hope Vanderbilt isn't a total disaster.
Right.
That's what you have to show for it. So I would look at it from the perspective of if you lose the game against Georgia, you almost have to beat Wisconsin to have one decent non-conference win. And then, Marquette is looking like a 500-ish team in the Big East play if you're going by projections and how strong the top of the league is right now.
Yeah, because that's the ultimate thing, and maybe I'm coming around and talking myself into Payne Touches' point of view, but the top of the Big East is much more significant. Is better even than we thought it was going to be. We knew it was going to be good, but the 1 through probably 5 in the Big East is better than we thought in total.
Now Butler snuck up on us again.
Yeah, you know? Georgetown's probably worse.
But I haven't given up on them being competitive either, even though Georgetown fans especially can get down in the dumps after a couple of losses. I still think Georgetown has the talent to be basically kind of where Marquette is. I think Georgetown and Marquette are going to be jostling for position all Big East season long.
Right. But when it boils down to the top five teams, Villanova, Creighton, Xavier, Butler.
And then I think you kind of get into a mix where Seton Hall might be the next team.
Right.
And then you got Marquette and Georgetown in that mix there. And you're thinking probably DePaul and St. John's are at the bottom, and maybe Providence isn't quite as bad as we thought. But I'd still think Providence is a team. If you're talking finishing in the middle to upper part of the Big East, is a team you gotta sweep. I mean, you got to get two wins against them, because getting wins against those top four right now is looking pretty challenging.
So the bottom line is the Georgia game gives you some cover when it comes to the conference season. And you're right. I mean, they would. And Georgia also, right now, they're a KenPom ranked 60th team. So theoretically, you're also competing with Georgia for a bubble spot. So you want to win that game, get a road win, kind of carry the momentum of the three cupcakes with you into the Fresno State game. And then hopefully by extension, carry that into the Wisconsin game, which. So we say Georgia is the most important, but that's because we feel it's the most winnable. You beat a Wisconsin. If you beat Wisconsin, even though it's at home, that's a more valuable win than any of the non-conference games that are on the schedule.
Right. Yeah. Beating Wisconsin would be another level. But I can kind of see Payne Touch's perspective, and I could kind of almost say yes to the question just because it is a great opportunity to get a decent win and then build some confidence and then see what happens in the following week. Hopefully you beat Fresno State, and then maybe you've got something figured out as you go into the Bucky game. So to answer the question, I say yeah. It may be the most important game of the season as we kind of decide, look, is Marquette going to make a charge here and trying to be relevant over the next 2 or 3 months, or is Marquette going to take a back seat and hope to build an NIT resume?
Yeah. Yeah, I see it. I don't know that I'm ready to agree with it, but I can certainly understand.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I think basically another way of saying it is, if you lose this game, you have a lot to make up for.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, you got to either beat Wisconsin and or get double digit wins in the Big East.
So do you think they pull it off? Do you think Marquette goes down on the road and beats
Georgia? You're asking for my prediction. Unfortunately, I'm going to go. I was fooled getting excited with this team once. I'm not going to do it again. I'm going to go on the pessimist side and say they do lose this game, just because I want to see this team beat a respectable team in a tough environment before I start projecting them to do so. So I will say a tough game, but a loss.
Apparently the three cupcakes cleansed the pessimistic palate away a little bit, and I'm a little more optimistic, and some of it's really just driven around, okay, Woja's making the hard call, if you will, to swap out Reinhardt for Hauser, and I just think the way they kind of put a very dominant stamp on the three teams in the cupcakes, you know, an IUPUI is no pushover per se. I think it's going to be one of these games where with 10 seconds left, we're really going to be, you know, biting our nails, worrying about whether or not Wojo can draw up a game winning play.
Yeah. I kind of see it going that way too. It could come down to, you know, two or three decisions in the final 4 minutes of the game. And I'm just going to kind of go to the way of what I've seen so far, and I think Marquette will just fall just short in that regard. I hope I'm wrong, obviously, but I'm just going to go, yeah, I'm not going to project them to win tough games until I see them do one. So
I will say I do think Mattin is going to score at 24, 25 points at least, I think.
It would be great if Marquette could get him in foul trouble and just get him out of the game.
Yes, absolutely. I just don't know if we have the horses to do that.
Yeah, we're not exactly an attack the rim, get guys in foul trouble type of team. Except, you know, Cheatham attacks the rim pretty well, but we definitely don't get a bunch of free throws. So, not exactly Marquette's forte this year. While it had been in the past, it's just not what this team does.
Yeah, let's just hope the pick and roll defense has been tuned up in the shop over these last 3 weeks or three games.
Yeah, better be. Because if Georgia has the Michigan tape, they probably have a plan going into this thing. Briefly, Phil, let's just touch on Fresno State just a little bit, because that'll be the next game. You know, I've said before, I'm a little worried about this game because they're not a typical bye game type team. They're not like a terrible 300th RPI or KenPom type team. They're kind of in the middle. They've got four wins so far. One of them is over a Power 6, still trying to make that a thing, team in Oregon State. They played an exhibition against something called Menlo earlier this week. They're 4-2 on the year. They beat UTSA, who beat Texas recently.
Shaka.
Yeah, poor Shaka. But I still think he's a good coach.
Yeah, I agree.
And then they also beat Lamar. So I say it's a trap game just because Marquette has got basically 2 days, maybe a day and a half. You know, they'll be flying back from Georgia on Sunday night. Then they've got Monday to prepare, and then it's game day on Tuesday. So short turnaround. And they'll probably have Bucky on the brain looking ahead to Saturday. So it's a game they should win. KenPom has it as a 92% chance to win. They have Marquette as a 15-point favorite. Should win. I just worry that it could be a bit of a sleepy game as they come off of Georgia and look ahead to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I do see the argument for that. They're not the same stylistically, but if you look at them from a ranking and a performance standpoint, they're maybe a little bit better than IUPUI. So that gives me some hope. And I'm also thinking that the short turnaround from Georgia is beneficial simply because it refocuses them pretty quick, and doesn't give them a chance to look forward to the Wisconsin game. But having said that, if they lose a close one or they get Michigan, I really am concerned about that Fresno State game because, you know, they may have some fragile confidence at that point that, yeah, you know, they just can't get a good win.
Yeah, that expression, don't let a team beat you twice, right? If you don't want to be down in the dumps and then not focus on the next one and then lose the next one. Yeah, like I said, the one thing that does give me some promise, besides the fact that Marquette's a huge favorite, is Marquette has blown out teams that they outclass athletically so far. So I certainly expect them to win. So if you're asking me for a prediction of this game, I would say certainly Marquette wins the game. I would just caution against saying it's definitely going to be a blowout because Fresno State's a little bit better than that.
Yep, I would agree with you.
Yep. Hey, let's get one more scrambled question before we get out of here. The guys over at Marquette Nation asked us to do scrambled questions, and the best question they gave us was who has the better jumper between you and me. That's the best they gave us. I would say right now, Phil, I haven't played basketball in a while, Phil, so I would have to say it's probably you right now, although I shot a lot over at the rec center back in the day, but that's been a while.
Yeah, I right now I think I got the edge because I do play semi regularly, pickup games. But yeah, back in the day, college. First of all, I was much more of the down
You're the
low
postman.
bruiser.
You're the post guy, for sure.
Yeah, I was the post guy. I kicked it back out to you, and you were the spot up shooter. So I would say, when it mattered, when we actually cared about how well we played in basketball games,
And yeah, when I didn't turn
you
it over, I would, pass it to our other roommate, Dave, who would chuck it from about 30 feet.
Dave was the Reinhardt of our intramural league.
Hey, one more question that we did get online. I think it's interesting. I think it's something that I may want to revisit as we get to the tournament. But Paint Touch has asked us, let me see exactly how he phrased it. He said, "Do you still actively root for or against Buzz and Crean? Why is it wrong? Which way is to go?" I don't know about you, Phil, but I guess maybe the most recent wound is fresher, so I don't find myself rooting for Buzz as much. I think I'm over Crean. Not that I'm like necessarily rooting for Indiana to win games or anything, but I'm definitely past the Crean thing. I guess the way Buzz left is still leaves me a little salty, even though I appreciate his time at Marquette. I guess to answer the question, I don't actively root against either one. It's not like I turn on the TV and say, "Oh, Virginia Tech's playing, Clemson, go Clemson." I don't really care that much. Now I would say I would probably feel a little sick if either one of them went to a Final Four and won a national title. I would probably be consumed by jealousy if that happened, but I wouldn't say I'm like actively and passionately rooting for them to fail.
I would say I'm not with Crean. I'm not rooting for him necessarily to fail, but I really enjoy when he does.
I think that's, and I definitely enjoy his awkward photos. Not as much as Ruby Q does, but I
Well,
do
and we
enjoy.
did have that one when Indiana lost to what was it? The Fort Worth, Indiana, Purdue, Fort Worth, or IPFW.
IPFW, yeah,
Yeah, when
Fort
they
Wayne.
lost to IPFW, you and I both had awkward Crean photos launched within
Yeah, us
nanoseconds
and
of
Dan
each other.
Massajeski, all three of us had just an awkward photo posted like instantly.
Right. And so living in Big Ten country, there's definitely a lot of disdain for Crean, especially on social media. So I kind of relish in that. It's a sick, twisted enjoyment I get out of it. It's kind of like rooting against Harbaughs. It's just kind of something that for some reason brings me joy. The buzz thing. I don't know that I necessarily actively root against him, but I get more angry or irritated if he does well than Crean. Like with Crean, it's kind of like whatever. I may have not at the time. I was certainly very passionate in my disdain for Crean, but Crean left, and I get he left. I may have not liked the way he left, but it's Indiana. Okay, I get it. The
Yep, it's a
buzz
big job.
thing, it's better job. I understand that. The Buzz thing still just bugs the hell out of me for how he left, why he left, the things he did after he left,
Where he went.
where he went,
Yeah.
the kind of the fake PR that made it sound like, when you know the inside story and you kind of go, okay, like, can we just be honest here? So that for that reason alone, I w while I'll never like visibly be rooting against Virginia Tech necessarily. I will always enjoy when they lose.
Yeah, I think to answer another way to answer the question, I think the right thing to do is to just be mature and let it go, but I'm just not that mature.
Correct.
I'm just not. And like I don't – maybe this is a weird way to look at it. I don't root – like I root against them in a way in with their current teams, but from a Marquette perspective, I'm kind of still for them. Like, for example, to kind of explain that, like when Crean had that recorded message – celebrating the, what was it, the 10th anniversary of the Final Four team?
Yeah.
And like some and they played on the at the Bradley Center, and some people booed because, you know, it's Crean. It's an Indiana guy, but he was talking about the Final Four team. I actually really appreciated that, and I really enjoyed it. Because when you look at them as Marquette guys, I appreciate them and cheer for them there. Like, if I were to meet either Crean or Buzz face-to-face, I would say, nice to meet you, I'm a Marquette alum. I really appreciate what you did at the school. I'm not necessarily a fan now, but I appreciate what you did for Marquette, you know? And so, like, same with Buzz, even though he's at Virginia Tech now and there may be some still hard feelings. As years go by, and if there are future anniversaries that Buzz was invited back to campus for, I would welcome him back and cheer for him if, say, like, there was an anniversary of the Elite Eight team or the Big East Championship team or something like that. I would welcome him back. But as far as do I want to see Virginia Tech go to a Final Four? Absolutely not. There's just too much jealousy there. I could not be sit in my couch and say I am so happy that Buzz took Virginia Tech that far and not Marquette. I just couldn't be that way.
So let me ask you this question: if you had to pick one, like you had to move all of your hate and dislike. Maybe hate's too strong, but all your dislike for that from one of the coaches to the other, which coach are you putting your most dislike on?
I would have to say I think I'd go Buzz. Just because okay. It's the thing is, all right, let's say hypothetically, like there was a situation with Wojo when he left and the fans were upset. Then I think all the hate shifts to the most recent one, right? We'd look back, you know, I kind of like Buzz. I think that's kind of happened with Crean, you know? Because like after Buzz left, people look back at Crean and say, you know what? I kind of like Crean now. And so, like, I think the most recent wound is the freshest. So I would say for that reason, I would probably, if you ask me if I had to pick one to dislike, I'd just go Buzz. But there is no denying that I appreciate what Crean did in his time. And let's not forget, Crean's the guy who brought in Buzz, right? He brought him as an assistant. And so Buzz would have never gotten the Marquette job if he hadn't been an assistant for Crean under a year. And then so that allowed the success to continue and give Buzz that opportunity to do what he did and recruit the junior college very well and bring in guys like Jimmy Butler and Jay Crowder and have the success that he did. So I just think Crean set such a solid base for Buzz to have success, not necessarily taking away what Buzz did, because obviously Buzz took over a very good team with James and McNeil and Matthews, but he built his own success after that with junior college guys. But he would not have been able to do that if Crean had not laid the groundwork, bringing in James, McNeil, and Matthews, and, you know, creating the excitement in the fan base that goes with going to a Final Four and having an NBA star like Dwayne Wade on the team. So I would say I would have to be much more appreciative of what Crean did. And even though I would not necessarily cheer for IU to go to a Final Four or anything, but honestly, I think if Indiana did go to a Final Four and win a national title, I'd get over it pretty quick. Whereas if Virginia Tech did that, I would be pretty salty.
Yeah, I agree. Because you also, one thing you kind of touched on that maybe my last point I want to make on this, but we don't want to spend all day talking about former coaches. You know, Crean kind of took the program from where it was, you know, when we came in 99, you know, the end of the Mike Dean era, Marquette basketball was not really much of anything.
Right.
And through some PR and some, whether savvy recruiting or, hey, he got lucky with Dwayne Wade or whatever, put the program back on the map, put it on a road to success. And to your point, he left a solid foundation for Buzz. And I think I would definitely have certainly more disdain. I relish the anti-Crean stuff because I just think it's fun. It's enjoyable. You know,
it's awkward. And it's funny.
It's my inner troll coming through. But, you know, the Buzz thing, to the point of Crean left a foundation, Buzz left a crater. You know, whether that was willful or not, but when Buzz left, In large part, the reason we're having to talk about year three of Wojo and this massive rebuild, and are they turning the corner? Are they getting better? It's because Buzz left the team with not much talent,
I think that's something people always say about any coach anywhere, right? Is did he leave the program in better shape than he found it? With Crean, it is an unquestionable yes. With Buzz, it's complicated because he put a lot of, he put a lot of banners and trophies up with the Sweet 16s and the Big East Championship and the Elite Eight. So he won a lot, but at the time he left, it was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I would say more than a bit of a mess.
Right. And Wojo's just now starting to clean, like he just finished cleaning it out, basically.
Right, yeah, exactly. So I definitely think from an animosity standpoint, it's definitely Buzz over Crean, but that doesn't mean we can't enjoy, Crean spilling his Pepsi or something.
Yeah, always. I will always be all for awkward Tom Crean moments. Absolutely.
Yes.
Fun question for Pay Touches. And again, I think we might want to revisit that when the tournament starts.
Yeah,
Is the
when we see where they actually are.
Yeah, like if like Indiana's a one seed and Virginia Tech is a two seed somewhere, it's like, oh gosh, we can't have this happen. We'll revisit it, but that was a fun question. Hey, as always, everybody, we appreciate you listening to us here on Scrambled Eggs. We welcome your feedback. You can tweet at us. I'm Joe McCann 3, Phil is MOOF23. You can hit us up on the team handle at Crack Sidewalks. Leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. There's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page, and also leave your reviews and your ratings on iTunes as well. Phil, I'm predicting 1-1, but I hope you're right and we go 2-0 this next week.
Yeah, I'm feeling 2-0, cautiously optimistic. I just think I have so much enthusiasm for Badger Hate Week to start early for me and for the team. I
That's
really
right, you have an early start to Badger Hate Week.
Yeah, I do. The Bush household will be chilly and quiet for the next couple of days until the Big Ten championship's over. But I will say that I'm looking forward to if they can get a win against Georgia. They got to take care of business on Tuesday. I think it helps shape up for a really tremendous opportunity against Wisconsin in a week.
Yeah, I know. Now, obviously, you want to bet with your wife about Owen not wearing red at the basketball game. Do you lose out when it comes to Penn State against Wisconsin?
Yes, I do lose out because I can't, I can't play the I attended the school card. So
yeah, that's fair.
I've been a Penn State fan since I was like two, I guess. But you can't carry it forward. Plus, he's surrounded with Wisconsin people. There's no anchor point to Penn State. So. If she wants to put him in Wisconsin gear, that's fine. So be it. But Owen will proudly be wearing a Marquette gear come Saturday against the Badgers.
I like that. By the way, speaking of no red for Owen, it should be no red for everyone. I
Correct.
Think that should be a thing at Marquette's campus. I don't know if it's an official thing, but nobody should wear red that week.
Well, yeah, to steal from one of the things that I thought was clever in the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry, I don't know if you saw College Game Day, but when they crossed it, when Ohio State on the campus, they went around and put a bunch of scarlet tape over every M they could find.
Yeah, that was funny.
I thought that was really good. So they should do something like that on Marquette's campus, whether it's people wearing red or some sort of banner or sign or anything. All the stop signs should like. No, I guess maybe that's vandalism, but.
Yeah, you can't make all the stop signs blue. I don't think you could do that, but yeah, nobody wear red on Marquette's campus that week. I think that should be a thing people should start. But
yeah,
hey, anyway, that's gonna do it for Scrambled Eggs this week, everybody. Again, we appreciate you listening. Contact us on social media. Until next time, seashells and balloons.